The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And as I'm sure you've noticed throughout this show, all of the last few days, the last week, Brexit is big news. Probably bigger news than ever, at least since Britain left the European Union all the way back in June 2016, those far-off days. Who would have thought back then we would still be here 3 years later talking about Brexit? Well, we are, and we're going to do a bit of a Brexit special edition today. There's still the latest Brexit news from yesterday. This story is changing so fast, so we're going to start there. But then I want to take a few steps back and look at the big picture. You know, look at what's happened with Brexit over the last 3 years. Go back to the referendum, to the run-up to the referendum. Because I think when you do that, some of the trends here, some of the forces at work are exposed so clearly. You just really get a picture of what is going on in Britain. And it's a trend, it's a story that is vitally important for all the nations around the world. So in that second half, we'll look at the story of Brexit, the battle for Brexit. And I think also by doing that, we can kind of make this subject simpler to catch up on, to keep up with, for those of you that aren't from the UK. I certainly sympathize with if you're in that position. I feel like I'm in a kind of a similar position, trying to keep up with everything that's coming out of the United States. I mean, you can study and read it and understand it, but at the same time, you don't kind of have the same effortless grasp of what's going on in the same way that somebody that lives there. Or maybe that's not even effortless even for those that live there. I shouldn't quite say that. I think it's still, even if you're American, a challenge to keep up with just all the significant news coming out of the White House and the way that it's being distorted by the radical left. But if you're not familiar, or as familiar, or been brought up with America's system, it's harder to keep up with, and I think it's the same with Brexit. Well, a few big stories from yesterday. Of course, there are still big developments happening every day. First, Speaker John Bercow, the Speaker of the House of Commons, this person that's proved so huge and influential when it comes to Brexit, he announced that he would resign. He gave a resignation statement to the House. Yeah, we can play. I've got a clip of that. This is clip one. We can play. This is him announcing that he is going to be stepping down.
At the 2017 election, I promised my wife and children that it would be my last. This is a pledge that I intend to keep. If the House votes tonight for an early general election, my tenure as Speaker and MP will end when this Parliament ends. If the House does not so vote, I have concluded that the least disruptive and most democratic course of action would be for me to stand down at the close of business on Thursday, October the 31st.
I kind of enjoyed that bit of rejoicing there at the end from the Conservative Party benches where, or at least those that support Brexit, cheering his resignation there, or his statement that he will be gone by October 31st. Now, you know, this is someone who's done a huge amount of damage to Britain's political system, to the way Britain is governed. You know, prior to Mr. Bercow, I don't think really a normal person would be able to name the Speaker of the House of Commons. I mean, the previous Speaker, he got into kind of some scandal towards the end with the expenses and had to step down. But in general, the Speaker of the House of Commons is not a big job. You know, you would expect people to be able to name, say, the Prime Minister, maybe, you know, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the Home Secretary, some of those top important jobs. But the Speaker of the House is somebody that's meant to be much more in the background. You know, if he's doing his job right, he's not drawing attention to himself. You know, he's like a toastmaster or a chairman. You know, he's there to introduce others, to keep a smooth flowing business. He's not there to be in the spotlight. Because he's not a leader of a party. He's not somebody that has been elected in a general election to stand in a major position of power. He's there just to act as a neutral umpire. But instead, Mr. Bercow is really, you know, he's loved the spotlight and then he's politicized the job. He's openly opposed Brexit. He put a bumper sticker on his car that is so rude about Brexit that I can't read it out on this show. He's very, very open that he's not neutral on the biggest question of this age, really. The biggest question of in modern British politics. And he is very clearly on one side. Now, he's also done a lot to break with rules and tradition. You know, he said, I'm not in the business of invoking precedent, nor am I under any obligation to do so. If we were guided only by precedent, nothing would ever change. And the thing to remember, you know, Britain doesn't have a Britain constitution. Our constitution is made up of precedent, of these traditions. And it all revolves around people respecting those traditions. You know, the idea is that over the hundreds and hundreds of years that British Parliament has been in operation, it's built up a system, a way of doing things, and then that's the way that's followed. But Speaker Bercow has thrown that out, and he knows better than all of those people that over the hundreds of years, and especially during the 19th century and the 18th century, where the modern parliamentary system really took shape. You know, he knows better than all of those thinkers and everybody that developed these rules. And so he's saying, well, I'm not going to be guided by them. And so, you know, he's overridden precedent where it suits him. At the same time, though, he's been a huge stickler for precedent when that would help his cause, when that would help stop Brexit. You know, he's justified when that comes up. Well, then he'll quote precedent dating all the way back to 1604 and that's been never used since 1920. But suddenly now this ancient precedent is important because it helps him support Brexit or oppose Brexit. He's been very partisan in the way he's used this. Gets rid of the constitution, gets rid of tradition, gets rid of precedent if it means keeping Britain in the EU, but if it would help Britain get out, well then, or well, yeah, whatever it works, it all just revolves around keeping Britain locked in the European Union. The Telegraph wrote, Liberal Remainers have enjoyed a partisan left-wing pro-EU speaker. But then, you know, they make a good point here where they say, what happens if at some point an absolute gammon is elected to the chair? Someone who's very right-wing, somebody who wants to bring back hanging, basically, they go on to say. Someone who doesn't only want to leave the EU but go to war with it. Okay, well, now we've set this precedent of politicizing the speaker chair, and he's saying, well, the left may very well regret that. Then you'll might just miss the principle of non-partisanship in the speaker, because by siding with no one, it works as the ally of all. But I think it's also important to understand why he left. Why did John Bercow announce that he would be resigning yesterday? Well, the Conservative Party just on Sunday announced that they were going to run a candidate against Mr. Bercow in any upcoming election. So typically, because the Speaker is meant to be neutral and non-partisan, but he's still a member of Parliament, he runs in an election, but he runs unopposed. None of the other political parties run their own candidate, because it's meant to be a neutral position. John Bercow has gotten rid of that neutrality, and so the Conservative Party said, well, fine, if you're not going to be neutral, we will run a candidate against you in this election. And given that his election is in Buckinghamshire, I think it's a pro-Brexit seat, he would have lost that. He could he would have lost that election. I haven't seen any polls for that particular seat, but that just seems what would be likely. So it looks like he's jumped before he was pushed. But more than that, by going now, he's making sure that this parliament that is so pro-EU and anti-Brexit, chooses his successor. So if he were to be pushed out in an election, then the next parliament would choose the speaker. And so if you had a parliament that was anti-EU, they would pick either a neutral speaker or maybe an anti-EU speaker. But by resigning now, he can make sure parliament picks a Remain supporting speaker. And so he's going. This so there'll be someone for him to kind of pass the baton to, who's going to be there frustrating Brexit, trying to use whatever procedural tricks and things like that he can to keep Britain in the European Union. David Jones, he's a former Brexit minister. He said that John Bercow, he is gaming the system as he has done for years. He wants to make sure a Remain Parliament elects his successor, and before that, he is hanging around to oversee the process when the Prime Minister comes back from the summit of EU meet leaders. Nigel Farage, he tweeted, you know, good riddance when John Bercow made his announcement. But he also said, we are going to get a speaker probably in the same image as John Bercow. The lack of change is very disheartening. So it looks like John Bercow's not given up on opposing Brexit. He is just changing tactics. He's making sure he knows that his time is up. He knows that he personally is almost defeated. So he's making sure he passes the baton on to someone who is going to fight in the same way that he has been fighting. So that was one of the big pieces of news from yesterday. I mean, John, he has been a towering figure of the Brexit referendum and the post-Brexit world. One of the key people trying to stop Brexit. And he is stepping down. Another big news from yesterday in Brexit, Parliament held another vote on having an election. And again, they said, no, we don't want an election. We're not going to have one. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn gave a speech where he outlined his position on this, why he was opposing a fresh referendum. And here was his argument. This is clip 5.
Now, I want an election, Mr. Speaker, as the Prime Minister pointed out. And the Conservative Party has very generously broadcast footage of me and my friends saying that we want an election. I don't retreat from that at all. We're eager for an election. But as keen as we are not prepared to risk inflicting the disaster of no deal on us, our communities, jobs, our services, or indeed our rights.
So he's saying, well, we want an election. Yeah, we want to go to the people, but you know, we're afraid that on this issue, the people might get the answer wrong. They might vote to get us out of the EU without a deal. So to stop that from happening, we're going to delay having an election, and we're going to try and before we have an election, make sure that the British people can't make that decision. Make sure Britain is locked in to the European Union. I mean, Boris Johnson, to his credit, Prime Minister Johnson, he pointed this out in his speech. He actually he gave this before Jeremy Corbyn gave his reply, but it's still a good critique of it. Here is what he said in that debate yesterday.
And the common thread joining all these parties is that there is their extraordinary belief that the national interest requires them preemptively to protect the British people from the consequences of their own democratic decisions. The truth is, Mr. Speaker, they only believe in democracy when it delivers the results that they want.
So they only believe in democracy when it gives them what they want. If the people want something different to what they want, if the people seem like they're in favour of a no-deal Brexit, well then, no, we don't want democracy. Now we have to protect people from democracy. They really are being exposed for what they are. And we'll get into some of that as we get into the second half. In terms of other fairly big pieces of news or results from yesterday, the House of Commons, they also, the pro-EU people in there, they basically targeted Dominic Cummings, one of the chief advisors of Boris Johnson. He was really key in the Brexit referendum and in supporting Brexit. To the left, he's kind of like the evil Rasputin-like figure that's behind all of this. He's working for Mr. Johnson now to get Britain out of the European Union, but they voted to force him to turn over all of his private communications around suspending Parliament or proroguing Parliament. And basically, they want to go over all of his private communications now and see if they can trip him up, see if they can find some way that he's done something illegal. And there's a whole bunch of other advisors they've asked to hand over their private communications, which is just unprecedented. And basically, there have been a bunch of court cases going on where the courts have been trying to divine the government's motives about proroguing Parliament, with some people arguing, well, if they did it for this reason, then it's illegitimate. And so now they're saying, okay, now they're trying to force some of these people that were discussing prorogation to hand over their documents so they can see what they were thinking. Now, I think we're going to look at another court case because Dominic Cummings, he talked about Dominic Grieve, who pushed this effort in Parliament to get this communication. He said, for a supposedly adequate lawyer who loves the European Court of Human Rights, Dominic Grieve doesn't seem to realize that his request for private messages is blatantly illegal and will be rejected by the Cabinet Office. We love the rule of law in number 10. So he's saying, well, no, your request is illegal. We're not going to comply. So we'll see how that plays out. It is it's just so similar to some of the things going on in the White House now with, and that has been going on over the summer with the House of Representatives requesting documents from the White House and then saying, oh, no, it's illegal for us to give you these documents. So we'll see how that one plays out. But it is interesting to see the left just and the pro-EU is picking on these individuals, targeting these individuals. You know, if you played a prominent role in getting Britain out of the EU, they're going to come after you and they'll find a way to come after you. We've seen that with other individuals. And then one of the other big announcements from yesterday was that the House was prorogued. It was suspended. But the pro-EU forces, including Speaker John Bercow, they really try to make it out that this normal piece of procedure, they really tried to make it sound like it's something illegitimate, protesting it and really, this is just a normal piece of House business, but they were really, really going after it with protests. Here's a clip of them, how they reacted when the prorogation was kind of formally enacted. This is clip two.
Authorised by Her Majesty's Commission to declare her royal assent to acts passed by both houses and to also declare the prorogation of Parliament, desire the presence of this Honourable House.
Really?
No.
No.
No. No.
That's a lot of no's, a long no. It's just bizarre sometimes, the House of Commons. But that's a pretty standard procedure. But then they're all, this was the Labour, the pro-EU benches, all protesting that. Here's how John Bercow, he kind of grandstanded and gave this, instead of just doing what his job would normally be, a speaker and just getting up and walking off to go over to the House of Lords for the prorogation ceremony. He had to give this little speech where it wasn't a little speech, if it's John Bercow, it's usually a long speech, where Mr. Bercow tried to paint this as something illegal or illegitimate. Here's a clip from that.
This is not, however, a normal prorogation. It is not difficult. It is not standard. It's one of the longest for decades. And it represents, not just in the minds of many colleagues, but huge numbers of people outside, an act of executive fiat. Require advice on order from you, Mr. Stewart. You're a master of disorder, man. I completely understand why very large numbers of members are much more comfortable staying where they are.
So you've got this big protest. If you were seeing, it wasn't in that clip, it was the clip before. If you're watching on our YouTube stream, then you would see people standing around the Speaker of the House with holding up pieces of paper. I think it's hard to see in the video exactly what they are. They're saying silenced on there. Because Boris Johnson, they're saying, by suspending the House in a way that's typically done every year, and sure, this might be a few days longer, but by giving up, I think it's something between 5 to 7 days of sitting time. That's what's been given up with the House of Commons, that their voice has now been silenced. And so they're protesting that. And that was Mr. Bercow giving his support for that protest, saying, okay, well, normally the whole House of Commons would walk over to the House of Lords for the prorogation ceremony. But if you want to protest by staying where you are, you know, I completely understand that. And so then the pro-EU parties all remained in place instead of filing out. And actually, when the Conservatives did file out, again, just part of just the normal ceremonies of proroguing Parliament, of suspending Parliament, they jeered them. Here's a clip from that event. This is clip 4. That British House of Parliament, it's typically rowdy and boisterous. The benches are measured so that that there's a nice wide aisle down the middle. The reason the aisle is that length is the idea that if members sitting opposite each other stand up and draw their swords, they don't have quite enough room to reach each other. So, you know, yeah, there's a certain combativeness that's part of Parliament's nature and history. But still, I don't remember that kind of behavior for something that's just a where it's not just, say, people trying to shout at parliamentary questions time, shouting at the prime minister, but just booing a whole political party and trying to demonize half of the other House of Commons. It really does feel unprecedented. And the hypocrisy here is crazy. You've got people, you know, the Stop the Coup movement, where they say, oh, well, to prorogue Parliament is a coup, to make Parmliament have about 7 less sitting days in the month of October and September. Well, that's a coup. We're holding up signs saying we've been silenced. We're being silenced. And at the same time saying, well, you know, we're not going to have a general election because people might get the answer wrong. People might allow a no-deal Brexit if we were to hold an election now. We can't allow that. So they say they're being silenced, and at the same time saying, well, if you believe that Britain should leave the EU without a deal, you're not allowed a voice. If you are one of the 17 million plus people who voted for Brexit, you're not allowed a voice. But we're being silenced because we're not going to be able to sit in Parliament for a few days. And then some of other parts of this hypocrisy, I mean, it's just almost mind-blowing. John Major, Prime Minister John Major, he prorogued Parliament for a lot longer during the 1990s. And he prorogued Parliament, you know, not so that it was not to do to just start a new parliamentary session, not to uphold the will of a referendum, not to try and let 17 million people have their voice heard. He did it because there was a scandal going on, and he didn't want to answer some awkward questions in the House of Commons. You know, he didn't want to get caught lying to the House of Commons. At the same time, there's a lot of details he didn't want to come out. So he prorogued Parliament to avoid awkward questions. Now the same person, Prime Minister John Major, it was backing a court case saying that this prorogation is illegal. So I can prorogue Parliament for much longer to avoid awkward questions about a scandal, but you can't prorogue Parliament for a shorter time because I think you're doing that to try and make Brexit happen. There's hypocrisy all over this. And that's really being exposed throughout this Brexit process. And we'll take a quick break now. And once we get back, we'll take a more zoomed out view at the battle for Brexit, at what has been going on over the past 3 years in Britain. And it really exposes some evil forces at work here. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Why did Great Britain have such a positive influence on the world? Was it because Britain was just better? Were the British inherently more powerful and more equitable? Great Britain spread not only its language, but advancements in agriculture, industry, science, commerce, banking, infrastructure, education, and the list goes on. Entire nations, great nations, have their common law and their representative governments because of the influence of Great Britain. The empire served its own interests, to be sure, but it also advanced its beliefs. It spent much of its treasure, its sailors, its soldiers, and its lives to fight slavery and to rid the world of barbarous practices. Not always because it was economical, but because it was right. Where did those beliefs come from? What were those laws based on? Some may argue that they're just common sense. Some may say that the British are, or were, inherently a better people. Britain's laws were better. Its virtues were better. But not because its people were naturally better. It's because of what Britain's laws were based on. British law traces back beyond the Empire. It traces back beyond England, Scotland, Wales, or Ireland. It traces back through Britain's earliest ancestors. This heritage reaches back not hundreds of years, but thousands of years. It links directly back to a surprising yet familiar source. The virtues and laws of Great Britain don't trace back to a few philosophers and theorists scattered across the past few centuries. They aren't the result of impersonal forces and random historical texts. They trace back to one source. That source was an absolutely perfect law and government. And through the centuries and the millennia, the tighter Britain has clung to that source, the better its laws have been. Understanding that source explains where and why our British ancestors succeeded, and where and why they failed. And more to the point, it explains what we today so sorely lack. To find out where British culture originated, read Britain's 4,000-year-old history. This book is adapted from The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong. That book was read by 6 million people around the world, far more than a Times bestseller. Request Britain's 4,000-year-old history and prove the identity and future of Britain for yourself. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And today we're talking about the battle for Brexit. We talked about some of the recent news in the first half, but I want to take a step back now and look at what's been happening with Brexit. Let's put the recent news that we've seen over the last few weeks in the bigger context, in the context of this whole Brexit referendum. So Britain held its referendum to leave the European Union on the 23rd of June 2016. And this really was a David and Goliath type struggle. Basically, anyone who was anyone opposed Brexit and wanted Britain to remain part of the European Union. Every major political party campaigned to keep Britain in the EU. The Conservatives as a whole wanted Britain in the EU. Now, there were some senior Conservatives that wanted Britain out, but as a whole, the party and the majority of the party's leadership and its MPs wanted Britain to stay in the EU. Exactly the same with Labour. Liberal Democrats completely in favour of staying in the EU. Prime Minister at the time, David Cameron, he was for staying in the EU and against Brexit. There was a long list of former prime ministers that were pro-EU, that wanted Britain in the EU. Prime Minister Tony Blair, Prime Minister Gordon Brown, Prime Minister John Major. I didn't sit down and do the count, but I think it would be every living prime minister and former prime minister wanted Britain in the EU. You had just about every major government office wanting Britain in the EU. You know, the Chancellor of the Exchequer wanted Britain in the EU. Theresa May was Home Secretary at the time, wanted Britain in the EU. You know, anyone in any kind of senior post, they wanted Britain in the EU. The BBC wanted Britain in the EU. You couldn't listen to politics on BBC radio without just the... You'd listen for 5 minutes and their bias in favour of the EU was crystal clear. You know, it was always, you know, well, we've now got this such and such an expert on. So, Mr. Expert, why would Brexit be a disaster? You know, it was just constantly that from the BBC, which is where they dominate the news market over here in the UK with radio, TV, their website. They're a major, major source of news, even bigger than, say, someone like CNN would be in the United States. You had the Bank of England. They wanted Britain in the EU. They did not want Britain to leave the EU. The Confederation of British Industries, this group of large businesses, wanted Britain in the EU. The International Monetary Fund, the IMF, multinational body, wanted Britain in the EU. Just about every major bank or major business wanted Britain in the EU. President Barack Obama wanted Britain in the EU. Came out very clearly in favor of that. Presidential candidate Hillary Clinton wanted Britain in the EU. You had a huge list of major celebrities across all kinds of different areas. Richard Branson in business. You had sports personalities, just other media celebrities. You did have a small list. I mean, we heard from Ringo Starr yesterday. I don't think he came out during the campaign itself, but you had a small list of celebrities that did support Brexit. But by and large, the celebrity world was very much in favor of staying in the EU and against Brexit. And then you had just this huge number of experts, all in favor of the EU. And they weren't just saying, don't vote for the EU. On balance, we don't think it's the best to leave Europe. We should stay in. No, they were saying it is going to be an utter disaster if Britain leaves the European Union. The Treasury, again, not the politician at the head of the Treasury, but the government department, the Treasury, that's supposedly analysing this impartially. They put out a whole study where they said, well, if you vote no, there will be an immediate recession and the UK will lose 500,000 jobs. The Chancellor, George Osborne, he said, well, if you vote no, it's going to leave a £30 billion hole in Britain's finances, and we're going to have to raise taxes on everybody. So vote for the EU, and you're all going to be poorer. You had Goldman and Sachs. They came out right after the vote and said, well, now there's going to be an immediate recession. The International Monetary Fund, they said, well, if you vote for Brexit, there's going to be a sharp drop in equity and house prices. So vote for EU, your house is going to become less valuable, which means you're immediately less wealthy. The government put out a poster that said Brexit is going to make householders £4,300 poorer. And in fact, they even said it's going to make you £4,300 a year poorer. The Prime Minister gave a speech standing next to that poster. Here's a clip of that now. This is clip 8.
And I'm absolutely convinced that our economic security will be better if we stay in a reformed European Union, and it will be seriously at risk if we were to leave. Why do I say that? Because our economy in part depends on being able to trade in the single market of 500 million people across the European Union. And that is why the Treasury says, on our behalf, that this could cost families £4,300. That is the long-term cost, never mind the instant cost there might be from the shock of leaving the European Union. If we vote to leave on the 23rd of June, we will be voting for higher prices. We will be voting for fewer jobs. We will be voting for lower growth. We will be voting potentially for a recession. That is the last thing that our economy needs. After all the difficult decisions that have been made, after all the progress we've made in recent years.
So there's going to be a recession. You could lose your job. If you vote for Brexit, you could lose your job. And it just goes on and on. Barclays said there would be a 0.4% contraction in gross domestic product in 2017. Credit Suisse said 1% fall. Nomura, 1.3% fall in GDP. the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, they said consumers would be shaken and they'd cut back on their spending. People said there would be food shortages. This is from a press release from the University of London just before the election. And they said the referendum on the UK's European Union membership will have momentous significance for the country's food system, according to a new briefing paper published by the Food Research Collaboration. The report, called Food, the UK and the European Union, Brexit or Bromain, argues the country must wake up to the enormity of unravelling 43 years of co-negotiated food legislation. If the country decides to leave, this press release says, food imports are predicted to become more expensive, prices would increase, there could be major disruptions to the finely tuned just-in-time supply chain on which the UK food system now depends. So there could be major disruptions in supermarkets. There might be food shortages. People were saying, well, there's going to be medicine shortages. People will die, they were saying. If you vote to leave the European Union, people are going to die because there'll be shortages of medicine. Mr. Cameron, he even hinted that Brexit could cause World War III. He said, can we be so sure that peace and stability on our continent are assured beyond any shadow of doubt? Is that a risk worth taking? Now, he's right to not assume that peace and security on Europe are assured. But his implication there that, well, Brexit could cause World War III couldn't be more wrong. And, you know, of course, CNN were all over this as well. Here's a clip from CNN, again, back in 2016, in the run-up to the election. This is what they were saying about, well, what will happen if you vote Britain to stay to leave the European Union? This is
we
clip 7.
We just don't know what the consequences of a vote to quit the European Union will mean.
Well, the government tell us they know. $42 billion hole in public finances.
That's a long-term thing. It's the immediate. We're going to see the pound probably slump 20 or 30% very quickly. We're going to see a knock-on effect on the stock market, and we could see a knock-on effect on the European stock markets. The whole global economy, if you like, is on hold waiting for this vote. And we've seen effects in the Japanese stock market or in New York. So actually, it has Lehman Brothers collapse could be as nothing compared to Britain leaving the European Union. Remarkable.
Lehman's Brothers collapse, the 2008 financial crisis. You know, that could look like nothing compared to what's going to happen if the British public vote to leave the European Union. And so Britain was, you know, we were faced with all of that pressure back in 2016. All of those experts, every expert in just about everything saying, you know, stay in. But Britain voted to leave. And it was remarkable. It caught the whole, I think it caught the country, it caught the world by surprise. You know, in fact, it was such a big shock, it caught Nigel Farage by surprise. At about 10 p.m. on polling day, and all the exit polls had been released and things like that, Nigel Farage, the leader then of UKIP, who'd been campaigning to get Britain out of the EU for years, he conceded defeat. He said, it's been an extraordinary referendum campaign, turnout looks to be exceptionally high, and it looks like Remain will edge it. So he thought, even Nigel Farage thought, that Britain had voted to remain in the European Union. And then overnight, the results came out. And it ended up completely different to what anyone had expected out of this kind of David and Goliath struggle. You know, the Remain forces seemed so strong. So much were backing Remain there, keeping or against Brexit. You know, how could they possibly lose? But they did. And this really shocked the elite in Britain. You know, they viewed themselves as the natural rulers. They know how best. And then this referendum came along. And they would have never granted this referendum if they believed that Britain would actually vote to leave the European Union. Instead, all of the polls for years said, oh no, Britain's going to vote to stay. Britain's going to vote for stay. And so they thought, well, okay, we can put this issue to bed. For a long time, there's been a vocal minority saying we need to leave the European Union. Well, we can shut them up by holding a referendum, voting to stay, and then we'll never hear anything more about this. And they lost. And they were just shocked. Mr. Flurry, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry, he had an article in a recent... I should have noted down exactly which issue. I would guess it's something like the August or the June issue of the Trumpet, called What the University Scam Reveals About America. And he was writing about the elites in America, you know, just the people at the top of all of these different organizations and government departments. But I think it perfectly describes the elites in Britain as well. But he wrote, they think they rule the universe, as Shapiro put it. They excuse whatever illegality they choose and attack whomever they will. They feel entitled and unaccountable. They believe they are justified in operating outside the law. Since Donald Trump became president, a mountain of this type of shady, behind-the-scenes lawlessness has been exposed. The Mueller investigation was not really an investigation. It was an unlawful attack on the Trump administration. These educated elites are trying to overthrow the votes of 63 million Americans. That is an attempted coup. Before the last presidential election, these people just knew they would win. And this is exactly the same with Brexit. You know, they just knew they would win. Now they're trying to overthrow the votes of, in the UK's case, 17 million Britons. And there's a whole load of shady behind-the-scenes things that they've been getting involved in to try and do that. Going back to this article, Mr. Flory writes, they think they are destined to rule the universe. In most cases, they are not elected officials. Nobody voted for them. But they consider themselves the only ones qualified to govern. And yet, that's exactly what we saw from that response, say, from, I mean, he's in an elected position, but from, oh, now I've forgotten his name, the leader of the Labour Party, Corbyn, Mr. Corbyn. You know, when he was up there saying, well, you know, yeah, we want an election, but we don't want to risk a no-deal Brexit. The people can't be trusted with that. You know, they believe they're the only ones qualified to make those decisions. We can't let the electorate make that decision. They write that they cannot believe a barbarian like Donald Trump became president and they cannot take it, so they must overthrow him. And they cannot believe that Brexit won. You know, they were painting these people, they were painting Brexit as racist. If you wanted to vote for Brexit, they were telling everybody, and they still believe this, well, then you're racist. He writes, these individuals do not feel bound by the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. They have no respect for our Bill of Rights, which safeguards our freedom of speech or freedom of religion and protects us from government overreach. In here, you know, John Bercow, Mr. Bercow, no respect for parliamentary procedure, for precedent. And he'll even admit that. And so you had the election, and very quickly after the Brexit election, you had some movement starting, people calling for a second referendum. Well, we need to do it again. This was from PBS. This was from PBS just shortly after the Brexit vote there. This is clip 9, just a day or two later.
A crowd still in disbelief gathered outside London's Parliament Square to protest the referendum.
There's something not right with this country, and we really need to make some big changes.
Around 2 million British citizens have signed a petition on Parliament's website calling for another referendum, saying the 52% to 48% vote to exit the EU was not decisive enough.
It's almost like a grieving process because I feel that people don't know what they voted for. I feel like they voted based on lies.
Yeah, grief-stricken is the best way of putting it. It's just dreadful. It's just dreadful. We've made ourselves a laughingstock of the world.
That was how they reacted. We've heard this again and again and again since Brexit. Well, people voted based on lies. You know, they claimed, well, they only voted, people would only have voted for Brexit because they were lied to. There's no other reason. That's why they voted to leave. And then look, you know, go back to some of those statements that I read about what these people were saying, about what all these different experts were saying. Well, if Britain leaves the European Union, there'll be food shortages. Who are the ones telling the lies here? It wasn't the Brexit campaign. Like I said, you had Credit Suisse saying 1% fall in, they were, you know, these were concrete forecasts. If you vote for Brexit in 2017, the economy is going to drop by 1%. Instead, it ended up rising by 1.4%. You know, the Treasury saying, well, if Britain votes to leave the EU, you'll lose 500,000 jobs. 500 days after the referendum, instead, Britain had gained 300,000 jobs. At the end of 2016, the UK, you know, there wasn't an immediate recession. Instead, the UK was the fastest growing economy in the G7. And even The Guardian, a pro-EU paper in August 2016, writing just after the vote, they were saying, well, okay, yeah, we got this wrong. All of those predictions didn't happen. They wrote, unemployment would rocket. Tumbleweed would billow through deserted high streets. Share prices would crash. The government would struggle to find buyers for UK bonds. Financial markets would be in meltdown. Britain would be plunged instantly into another deep recession. Remember all that? It was hard to avoid the doom and gloom, not just in the weeks leading up to the referendum, but in those immediately after it. Many of those who voted Remain comforted themselves with a certain knowledge that those who had voted for Brexit would suffer a bad case of Myers remorse. And as they go on to point out in that article, it was all wrong. It never happened. Even the Bank of England, 6 months later, their chief economist was forced to come out and say, well, fair cop. We forecast a much steeper slowdown than what happened. We got it wrong. All of those experts were all wrong there. So immediately after the vote, you had people saying, well, it was based on lies. We need a second referendum. And I think what happened, you know, the politicians, the leaders, they couldn't come out right away after that first referendum and immediately call a second referendum. You know, I think that would just look too ridiculous. It would be a really transparent rejection of democracy. So instead, what they did is they started letting the clock, you know, what, playing down the clock, just trying to play for time. Let's delay Brexit. And then we can find ways to water it down. And then maybe eventually we can bring about a second referendum and we can reverse it. And so, you know, that's basically what you started to see happening. You had, you had something very remarkable happen, really. You had David Cameron, the Prime Minister Cameron resigned. And you had Prime Minister Theresa May took over. Now, she was a Remainer. She wanted to keep Britain in the EU. She campaigned for keeping Britain in the EU. Now, she did say at that point, well, we need to implement the will of the people. We need to keep with Brexit. And she brought in a whole load of people under her who were still pro-EU. You had the entire civil service, still pro-EU. All of these organizations that had spent all of those months in the run-up to Brexit saying, if you vote to leave the EU, there will be an apocalypse. They were all still in place. And maybe Theresa May, I mean, she did sound one of the most convincing of all of the Remainers saying, well, we need to implement Brexit. So maybe she was sincere in that. But you had a whole lot of people under her that had all come in, that had all supported the European Union. And now they were running things. And you also had, well, then soon, fairly soon after, a few months later, well, I guess it was like 9 months or so later, you had another election. And now here, people in Parliament had quite the dilemma. Parliament was mostly in favor of staying in the EU. Most of the country had voted to leave the EU. So you had a whole bunch of people now who were pro-EU, but they had to go and get elected by constituents that were anti-EU. There are a whole load of different pro-EU politicians whose very own constituency, whose own region they're voted in from, had voted for Brexit, and they'd voted against. They had to somehow get their vote. And so they went and they said, well, we may have voted differently, but we're going to respect the result of the referendum. And they did this, people from both sides of the House did this. They said, fine, I voted to stay in the EU, but the people have voted. We need to listen to the people. And here's Yvette Cooper. She was a leading Labour MP. This is what she said. This is clip 11.
We had a referendum. The thing I feel more concerned about than any possible scenario, because we don't know yet what those are going to be, is the idea of becoming a country that no longer respects democratic values. And I think that matters. We've had a referendum. We didn't go into that referendum, those of us who are campaigning in the referendum, and we didn't go into that referendum saying, look, I want you to vote Remain, but to be honest, don't matter how you vote, I'm going to ignore you.
So she was there saying, okay, well, fine, we need to respect. I may have disagreed, but I'm going to follow through with Brexit. That was from Labour. Then this is Heidi Allen. This was a few clips from her speeches in the run-up to that election, telling her constituents, okay, you know, I voted to stay in the EU. A lot of you voted to leave. We need to get on and we need to deliver the mandate and we need to leave the European Union. This is clip 12.
This is democracy. We might not all like the result. I was a Remainer. But the minute we start ignoring the democratic will of the people in this country, we are slipping very quickly towards the kind of banana republic I don't want to live in. So we have to accept the result.
The referendum was a different kind of vote. It was a national question. It wasn't a local one.
And I know that probably the majority of people in this room tonight will think, well, we don't want it. But we can't forget that this was a national vote. And I think it's wrong for us as democratic leaders to be picking and choosing the results that we don't like.
So quite frankly, if I'm re-elected as your MP, I am not going to waste time, precious time, resisting Brexit from happening. I'm going to grasp that opportunity, that leverage that opportunity we have with every fibre in my being and make the best of it.
I think those that voted to leave would think we were treating them as fools and that they were stupid and we didn't respect their views. So I feel a second referendum is not is not what we should be aiming for.
There's a montage put together by the Guido Fawkes blog, which added a bit of music there at the end. But these were two people on both sides that said, OK, well, I voted to stay in the EU. I don't like the result, but we have to go along with it. Both of those individuals, after the election, after they had given that message, turned around and supported a second referendum, turned around and started working against Brexit. And you saw this happen again and again and again. So many of these people who are in Parliament right now trying to stop Brexit, when they stood for election in 2017, said, we are not going to try and stop Brexit. And it's across the board. You know, the Stronger In campaign, this was the campaign that wanted to keep Britain in the European Union. Before the election, they said there are no second chances or reruns. So register to vote. You know, no second chances, no reruns. After the election, they changed their name. They rebranded to People's Vote. They were the same organization and they immediately began campaigning for a second referendum. They did exactly what they said they wouldn't do. John Major, the former Prime Minister, he said, there will not be another referendum on Europe. This is it. When the referendum didn't go the way he wanted, he became a major figure calling for a second referendum. Exactly what he said would not happen. You started to get an effort from all of these people that had opposed Brexit to try and undermine the Brexit campaign. You know, the Electoral Commission jumped into action. They ignored shady actions and behaviour on behalf of pro-EU groups. But then they came down like a ton of bricks on even the tiniest infractions that they could find from anyone that was supporting Brexit. And I've talked before on this show about their persecution of Darren Grimes, I think it was, where they investigated him twice, cleared him both times. On a third investigation, finally found one box that he ticked wrong, and then just really went after him. You had a film on Channel 4 that made it look like, with a whole bunch of celebrities, that really made it look like, well, the Brexit campaign was doing kind of dodgy, illegal stuff on social media, but the Remain campaign was all squeaky clean, and Brexit campaign won because they were doing illegal things and maybe in cahoots with the Russians. And that's not true. You know, both were aggressively using social media the way all political campaigns do. And so that's how we got to where we are now. You know, we had people say, we're not going to overturn Brexit, get elected and immediately try and overturn Brexit. And now Parliament is saying, no election. We don't like what the people might vote for. You have this situation now where the position for those pro-EU, you know, after the election, they said, we're going to respect the result. That has changed over the months to the point now where they're saying what we want is a second referendum where the question is, do you want to stay in the EU or come out with our deal? A proper Brexit won't even be on the table. They just want to ask people stay in or almost stay in. That's all that they're prepared to trust the British people with. We've had just this, you know, it's really exposed the anti-democratic and even lawless nature of those on the left. And I think, you know, but Mr. Johnson now over the last recent weeks, he's had a difficult time. But a whole lot of what the Remainers are doing has been exposed. You know, they can't pretend anymore. If there was another election coming up, they couldn't pretend that they would support Brexit or that they respect the results of the referendum. That's been exposed now. And this is one of the important trends that we've seen in America that Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry has drawn attention to. He had an article, The Kavanaugh Hearings, Revealing America's Lawless Spirit. And he wrote, since Donald Trump became president, the depths of lawlessness and corruption permeating America's leadership, aided by America's media, is being uncovered. He said that God wants all this evil. He said he wants it exposed. He is saving America temporarily, and one reason is to expose the evil. Now, are we seeing the same thing now in Britain? How much of this wouldn't have come out if it weren't for the events of the last few months? There's an evil force trying to bring both Britain and America down. If you believe the Bible, if you believe the Bible's the word of God, well, you have to accept there is a devil. And you have to accept that Britain and America have been blessed by God. This devil is there and he's working against those blessings. He wants to bring down our nations. He's working with individuals within the nation. You can look and you can read our free book, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast, and see how he's raising up a European beast power, to attack Britain and America. But he's the one. There's an evil force behind this, and God is restraining it for a time because he is exposing it. So he has a plan here. God is ultimately in charge. God has a plan in the whole world wrapped up in Britain and America. Our nations have received huge blessings, with material blessings, just even things like freedom and rule of law, not because of anything that we've done, but because promises God has made. And there's a devil out there that hates that, that's attacking that. God is exposing that, giving us, our nations now, an opportunity to repent and turn to him. If we don't, well, there's punishment coming, but it's all part of a plan for God to rain blessings down on the whole world. You can read much more about that plan in our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. I'd wanted to get into that in much more detail with you, but if you haven't read that book, if you don't know about that plan, please do get that from our website, thetrumpet.com. Well, it's been great to talk about all of this with you today. Please do keep on listening. Mr. Stephen Flowery will be back tomorrow here on TD or kpcg.fm.